From Acres USA, you are listening to the Acres USA podcast, a conversational podcast where we'll explore sustainable farming, regenerative practices, and the latest innovations in eco-agriculture with some of your favorite farmers and ranchers. I'm your host, Taylor Henry, the owner and CEO of Acres USA. Welcome to the Acres USA podcast. All right, we are live. I'm joined with Dan Kittredge. In 2010, Dan founded the Bionutrient Food Association with a singular, simplistic vision, increasing quality in the food supply. This resonating message has filled workshops and speaking engagements with farmers and consumers alike hungry for answers. Expanding upon these concepts is the BFA flagship event, the annual Soil and Nutrition Conference, that is now in its 10th year. So, Dan, thank you for joining us, the Acres USA podcast. We appreciate you being here.
I'm really glad to be here, and welcome to the next generation of Acres.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I'm sure most people who are coming from the Acres audience know a lot more about you than they know about me. But for the folks that maybe don't know a lot about you, can you give kind of an introduction to who you are and what you do on a daily basis?
My background, I grew up on an organic farm in Massachusetts. My parents were leaders in the organic movement in New England, helped write some of the first standards, ran the annual conference for 25 years, wrote the newspaper, chaired the the state organization. So I come from the organic movement. Basically never really stopped farming. You know, would farm in the summer and travel the world in the winter in my 20s, and, you know, farmed every summer in my teens and into through college. And when I got married, actually had to figure out how to make a living, and thought raising my family on the land was a good idea, and didn't really know how to do anything else to make money besides farming, and realized I was a pretty bad farmer because I couldn't make much money. And so I started reading books and found Acres, and, you know, tracked it down, and there was like all the insight, the integrated perspective and wisdom, and the conference and the pre-conference, you know, and the books, and the just, yeah, that was my, my soul family.
That's awesome. I think I explain the farm that you guys grew up on. What were you guys raising? What was the operation like?
Yeah. It was a mixed farm. Most of the income was vegetables, but, certainly pigs and chickens, and, we had a milk cow and some beef and, turkeys and hay fields and orchards. So, small mixed operation, you know, a glorified homestead really, but a farmer's market and then CSA and restaurants and health food stores and stuff like that.
Was that your main, was that your parents' main profession, or was their main profession, were they in, I had heard that they were a large part of the initial organic standards. Was that their job, or were they farmers that emerged as that?
No, I mean, their day job was actually, they got, the income came from running NOFA, Northeast Organic Farming Association. There's seven state chapters, initially started in the 70s in Vermont, New Hampshire. The Massachusetts chapter was founded in the early 80s. The first organic standards were I think, up in Vermont, New Hampshire, and I think over at Oregon. They wrote the first standard in Massachusetts in 86, I think. So it was relatively early, but not the earliest. So, well before the government took it all over, for sure.
Yeah.
And my father, you know, sued the NOP early on for, you know, violating the standards of allowing chickens to not have access to land, and lost. And, you know, that was part of the part of the beginning of the downhill trajectory that has been the certification frame. But I think, you know, for me, it was once I came, got to Acres and realized, you know, what I call now principles of biological systems, you know, Acres called EcoAg, which is a much more sophisticated understanding, as far as I'm concerned, than regenerative or organic, for sure. And I heard about bricks and all that kind of stuff, and started changing practices and seeing pests and diseases go away and yields go up and costs of production go down. I said, oh my God, there's more to it than just not using chemicals. It's actually a living system. And if you don't work in harmony with it, then it's not, you shouldn't expect it to work well. That's what got me started, given workshops, turned into courses, and then in 2010, turned into an organization called the BFA, Bionutrient Food Association, The central insight about food, you know, nutrient density, which is a term that we really created at Acres. You know, I went around to all the elders and said, hey, I think this is a really, you know, you guys are talking about bricks and things like that. Like, you know, where's the measurements? Where's the science? You're all talking about it, but there's no movement around it. Where's the organization organizing around it? Like, isn't this like the point? The food quality, is that the point? Like, yeah. And I'm like, so I wrote a manifesto and had, I got almost everybody to sign it, you know, with like Bruce and Jerry and Gary and Arden and, you know, ran the table up. It used to be Charles would give out a piece of paper, like the party this year is in this room at this hour on this day. And it was totally like you had to be seen enough to be invited. And it was all the old timers and some of the youngers got invited. And I showed up that year with a manifesto and then said, you know, I want to take this on, this thing about quality, but I'm not going to do it without you guys' blessing. Yeah, it was totally cocky move, but I got them all to sign it in front of each other. Oh, gosh, about 30, late, maybe 29, 28. I'm not sure. I think it would have probably
You're quite a bit younger than all those guys. And
totally. Yeah.
That was risky. That's kind of the essence of what Acres stood for, right? They were welcoming to anyone, you know, that had solid information.
Well, they were obviously looking for the next generation that was going to pull things forward. And, you know, who knows? I mean, now that I'm one of those people who's been around for a while and you notice people are coming up and you always want to, you know, you want to support the youngers that seem like they're passionate and they're serious and, you know, 1 out of 10 might make it, but you want to support all the ones that can. For me, it was like a calling. It was like I'd been questing for my purpose in life for a long time, and I felt like I'd finally found it. But I also felt like it was not mine to just do, because if the elders didn't give me their blessing, I feel like I needed their blessing. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And so I got it in writing.
Well, that's...
And I did it in front of them all. They were all there in the room. And I wasn't like cornering Jerry over here and Bruce over there. It was like, okay, I'm just going to, yeah, it was, yeah, definitely a memorable evening.
So what are the first, so you've been saying a lot of first names, what for people that don't know them for sure, what are the elders in your eyes of Acres USA that, you know, welcomed you into the community?
Who were the elders of Acres USA? So obviously, Charles Walters is the, you know, the brilliant polymath founder. I had enough years there and sat down and talked to him and asked him questions and, you know, and I mean, but so, Bruce Tanio, obviously, you know, Dan Scow, Jerry Brunetti, Gary Zimmer, Arden Anderson, Graham Sate used to come, Neil Kinsey. I mean, Elaine Ingham actually fits in that number, because she was early and young and pushing the envelope. Not a lot of women who were just like regularly there, but she definitely was. And
yeah,
and I properly respected for her work bringing forth the soil food dip stuff. But I'd say that was probably the short list.
So I feel like I stepped into such a big shadow of Charles Walters. I learn more and more about him, you know, every day I listen. Luckily I have access to all of his, or not all of them. I wish we had access to all of them. We have a basement full of boxes that still have audio clips in them that we haven't gotten through, but the audio clips that I've listened to from Charles at Acres conferences, you know, he was obviously an extremely special, talented person that was amazing at, you know, grabbing a crowd and entertaining people while talking about really important things and testing people. So he almost would use humor and knowledge to test the crowd and to challenge people to say, hey, by the time you come back here next year, we want you to improve. And here are the things that we think that you could improve on, or here are the things that successful folks that are in the same niche as you are doing. And you know, he would almost challenge people, but in a humorous way. And you could tell the crowd, you know, would feed off of him. So from a person like me, who's, you know, probably not even in a way, it's almost unfair that I've gotten into this position to be in the shadow of Charles Walters. But What would be your advice to me to make sure that Acres lives on in the image that Charles envisioned and that he had founded it on?
That's a really good question.
That's a really good question.
The thing about Charles was he was non-dogmatic. You know, he was open to all kinds of different perspectives. I think he knew enough to know if somebody was onto something, and even if they hadn't, if they weren't totally right, there was definitely some truth in what they were saying. What I loved about the way he curated the conference was that all was fair game, you know, biodynamics, permaculture, organic, conventional, you know, all the quantum stuff, all the, you know, the stuff we call woo woo that I think for the last few years, Acres has been really shying away from, the cosmic pipes and the field tuners and the structuring water and the intention and the dowsing and, you know, all the subtle consciousness oriented aspects of things was just as fair as the conventional biochemistry, microbiology, you know, physics. But, you know, we're talking about life. It was biological ag, and it's life. And, you know, what is life might be a fair question. And a lot of people think there's a lot more to it than just the the physical plane 3D stuff, that there's consciousness and there's coherence and there's biophysics and I would say it was a big tent. The exciting thing to me was it's a big tent, and serious, thoughtful people were able to bring their perspectives and be listened to and be respected and be disagreed with, in a open and collaborative space, which is kind of the principles of the Enlightenment, you know, and free speech and the liberal sort of, before liberals was perverted by, you know, the current political dynamics, as far as I'm concerned, you know, that like we're open-minded and we're going to give everybody a chance to speak their truth, and we're going to respect them and listen to their perspectives. You know, a space for open conversation. But he was, you know, I remember one year I was, you know, sitting down with him before the keynote up in the big keynote hall, and he was sitting in the front row, and nobody was there with him. And I'm like, I just had the chutzpah to go and sit down and say hi and introduce myself. And we were just chatting away, and he was totally friendly and, you know, gentle and generous with his time. And then he got up when the hall filled up, and he just did this extemporaneous speech that just ranged all kinds of levels. And I think it was Ovid, that he was just like quoting Ovid, like paragraph after paragraph. He'd memorized this. I don't know. It's like people used to be smarter in the olden days. Like, I think I'm reasonably smart, and like, I'm nowhere that smart. You know, he was just a really, really special man.
I find when I listen to him, like, and you just don't hear people talk like that anymore. Like, those speeches would go on for 30 or 45 minutes, and it would be like, it's like, is he reading it from he performs it.
Completely extemporaneous. Yeah. Absolutely just flowing and channeling. It's one thing to talk about stuff, but it's another thing to like quote ancient Greek poets, you know, like long form. He's just a completely special man. Yeah.
No. Yeah. No, I know. I feel very.
Don't even try to fill him. Just try to hold space, you know, and keep the mission alive. This is the problem with a lot of these organizations: is the founders are brilliant, and we shouldn't expect to try to be at that level. The question is: are you going to turn it into a bureaucracy and suck the life force out of it, or are you going to try to keep the spirit alive and hold that space? Because there is a blessed space that's really got a charge to it. That was part of why I started the Soil Nutrition Conference in 2010, was because I could see that Acres was not going to be what it had been with his passing. It was pretty obvious to me that level of broad perspective was not going to be continued. Acres has been an absolute inspiration for me in so much of my work with the BFA, 100%.
Well, it's amazing. It's great insight. I think my take on it, And it's interesting how you explained it. You know, I look at Acres as an arena for ideas that people can throw their two cents into. And then there's folks that are outlined in the arena that get to view everything from a different perspective. And it's our job to just allow people to come into the arena and discuss the different options and the different tactics and the different ideas that people have to push agriculture forward into the next generation. That's what I've seen. That's what happened, you know, from when they started in the '70s to, you know, pushing it through all these different waves of agriculture. There's always been this driving force of, like you've said, a welcoming of information and ideas and bringing people together to hear them. Not everybody probably agreeing with them completely, but the fact that we have the arena and we have the place for discussion, that's what we're going to continue. And the cool thing is, awesome. You know, we don't have that. We don't have a financial alternative motive. Because, you know, as you know, if you're in business and you're in the ag space and, you know, you're making a living in the ag space as a business, that can skew possibly, you know, how you'd want to bring all that information into the arena. Would you let all the information into the arena if your main business over here, you know, takes a hit from that? But I've also, you know, the people who are big in makers, you know, Gary Zimmer, Mark Shepard, you know, a lot of people that you talk about, they do a really good job of separating that too, where they do discuss the tactics and information, and they don't exactly always just push their products as well. So,
yeah, I mean, it was the thing, like, you know, transmutation and radionics, and, you know, I mean, there's some, like, quote unquote far out stuff that if you asked anybody in private, I remember asking Gary Zimmer about transmutation and he's like, yeah. But I don't usually say it publicly. And pretty much all the consultants, when they couldn't figure something out with their soil tests and everything else they knew, they had a radionics machine in the back room. And if you asked them privately, they say, yeah, when I can't figure it out, I've got a radionics machine. I don't talk about it, but I understand that it's a real deal. And, you know, that's part of the way I feel like I've been able to be free, to your point, in a way that a lot of people that are consultants and agronomists and, you know, product manufacturers now that are famous and, you know, running big businesses are, you know, get them in private and they will totally grant all these points, but they've chosen not to really talk about it publicly. And I think, you know, I can understand from a business perspective why you wouldn't do that. You got investors and you're dealing with people that can't quite see that broadly. And so you got to carefully watch what you say publicly. But for me, that's why rebellious spirit of just like, yeah, let it all hang out. Yeah, it's something pretty special.
I kind of compare it to, like, I'll explain to people sometimes about how I think farmers have, how they make decisions. And I always say, if you're sitting in a situation and you have to feed your family and there's different decisions that you have to make, the easiest way to feeding your family is going to be the first decision that's made. And I think a lot of farmers go that route and they make decisions based on that, which what they believe is the best way to make sure that they feed their family. And, you know, it's not always true, but, you know, it's out of anxiety for the, maybe you won't be able to feed your family.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, there's this guy called Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And the whole concept is basically like, the first thing people focus on is survival. Mm-hmm. And once survival's covered, then you can start to think about happiness. And then you can think about maybe your community. And then when all that's all set, then you start thinking about the world and the big picture. And, you know, it's reasonable, you know, like survival comes first. But to be in a place to be really thinking about humanity and things and be able to, like, safe and to hold safe space for that level of conversation is pretty special. Yeah.
Well, we hope to keep that conversation going, and obviously I think you're one of our first podcast guests because I've enjoyed our time talking on the phone and getting to know each other a little bit, and you know, just like everyone I talk to, I hope that we make you and all the other people that, you know, came to Love Acres proud, and we continue working together for a lot of years. But so after you know, like you said, you started a conference in 2010.
Yep.
So what was kind of,
I think the organization in 2010, and we did our first conference in 2011, actually.
Okay. Yeah. So how have you seen the progression of your conference? What does that conference look like today?
We started in the church basement in partnership with NOFA, which was the organization my parents ran, because we were a pretty small organization. And I was like, all this organic stuff is great, but there's more to it. And my mother was like, sure, let's go. Let's push the envelope, because she likes to, you know, she's a rabble rouser too. So yeah, we did it in partnership with NOFA the first, I think it was 3 years. And then finally we're like, you know, we were a big enough organization to say, okay, we want to take this over and just do it ourselves. If you guys don't mind, like, fine, no problem. You know, they basically helped, you know, helps get us off the ground. Yeah. Church basement first couple of years. And I think the third year we had Graham Sate come and we did it in a banquet hall. And then after that it was, you know, meditation retreat center, old, monastery that had a couple of big rooms and a bunch of little rooms. And then the last few years was, before COVID, was a conference center. Since COVID, we haven't had an in-person event. We did an online event in 2021 that was, I think it was 34 weeks, one presentation every week. I think we had people from 46 countries and 48 states or something like that, five continents. So, you know, it really is a pretty small grassroots organization in Massachusetts, New England. And now we're much more of a global organization. So, you know, we tried to do one in person in 2022. That didn't work because, you know, our community is just too broadly spread. We're launching one now here in May of 2024, and it'll be 16 weeks. And we're calling it the state of nutrient density. That was a word we basically created at Acres. I mean, it was in conversation with Arden Anderson and people like that. We're like, what's this word for high BRICS, basically? You know, there is no word for that thing that discusses the variation in nutrient levels in food. And that's a large part of what I've been, you know, responsible for helping to bring forth. And initially it was something nobody was really talking about. And then it was something people were like, no, that's not true. And then it was like, you know, it's starting to be, and then we've done a lot of research and sort of science work in the last 6 or 8 years. Proving it out, proving that nutrient variations are quite dramatic and they really do connect to soil health and not really to soil type or crop variety, or individual practice. It's like no-till is nice and cover crops are nice, but actually it's soil health that connects to nutrient levels. Just because you didn't till doesn't mean you have soil health. Just because you're certified organic doesn't mean you have soil health. Just because you're, you know, local to the point of a sale does not mean you have soil health. And so, and we built a meter that people could, you know, it shows that you can actually have a handheld flash of light meter that you can test nutrient levels and not invasively. Basically the idea is like a refractometer is a brilliant thing. And anybody who wants to see how good of a job they're doing should use a refractometer. Like it's really cheap and it really works. And your results are probably not going to make you happy because you're probably not as good as you think you are. But you have to squish a thing to get a reading out of it. And that does not going to work in a grocery store. So, you know, watching my parents be actively involved at the beginning of the organic movement and the certification system, and watching the certification system get perverted with bureaucracy and corporate influence, as far as I'm concerned, you know, for me, the question was, how do you develop a metric for discerning better and worse that can't be perverted? Ideally that's not a binary. Like if you are either organic or not organic, you know, there's various regeneratives. You are regenerative or not regenerative. You are local or not local. You are biodynamic or not biodynamic. And those are binaries, and life is not binary. Life is a continuum. It's like there's healthy and dead, and there's a bunch of space in between, right? It's not, and so, you know, what's the 80 out of 100? What's 20 out of 100? What's 40 out of 100? How do you define that? How do you build those meters? Now that we've, I think, quite successfully shown that this is real, it's significant, it connects to the things that the regenerative community would like to think it connects to, that the organic community, the permaculture community, the biodynamic community would like to connect to, that meters can exist, We got, you know, some companies actually kind of interested and people, new entities showing up, you know, new companies and researchers and certification labels. And there's a whole movement building around nutrient density, which is awesome because, you know, 15 years ago, it was just an idea and then it was just a word. And now it's like turning into a global movement. And so this year's conference is the state of nutrient density. And we're bringing in some of those people that are on the cutting edge from around the world into the conversation, and trying to have them get to meet each other because, you know, it's a young movement and somebody's doing cool stuff in Washington State, but they don't know who's doing awesome stuff in New Zealand. And they don't know who's doing awesome stuff in Germany. And they don't know who's doing awesome stuff in England. So it's a wonderful circle. And we're trying to hold space for that. So the model is once a week for 2 hours. I said May 14th, August 27th. And the presenter speaks for an hour. And then the other presenters get to ask that presenter questions for half an hour. And then the audience gets to engage for half an hour. So really just like, can we all come together globally in this conversation, get to know each other, develop relationships, understand what's going on? Because the more we know who we are and the more we know what each other's doing, the more we're going to hopefully work together and be allies and coalition as opposed to potentially competition, because certainly you always have that danger. I think like you kind of have in regenerative where we've got the best regenerative standard. No, we got the best regenerative standard. No, our regenerative standard is best. How about we all work together? How about we all, we all have important pieces. It's a biological system. It's a symbiotic dynamic, right? It's the polyculture. It's the microbiome. It's not me or you, it's we. And so, that's the vision of the conference this year.
That's
really looking forward to it. Great, great speakers.
That's amazing. What are some of the highlights? What are some of the speakers that are highlights for you? Or I'm sure all of them, but.
I think you and I have talked about, you know, a partnership with Acres and BFA, and, you know, you're going to be putting the stuff out to your list and getting a kickback from every registration. So hopefully, your community will be able to see in some of the newsletters and emails you send out some of these people. I think we were just talking before we started recording about Ken Hamilton, who's out in Utah, that Jerry Bernetti had told me about 8 years ago, who's got some brilliant work doing really fermenting fodder for cows and sprouting and fermenting for pigs and chickens and dramatically increasing weight gain, decreasing cost of production, shorter time to slaughter, way better nutrient level ratios, variations, human, you know, animal welfare stuff. Megan Westgate, we're sending an email out about her and what Non-GMO Project is doing with a new certification label that's like a One Health integrated label that's, they're famous for saying this stuff doesn't have GMOs in it, but how about now they're saying not only was it grown well and had inherently good quality in the food, but it was also processed well, like the way our grandparents would have processed food. So like you can grow high quality wheat and then take the bran off and turn it into, you know, toxic white bread, or you can sprout it and then grind it and then make sourdough bread. And so like, what's the quality of the thing in the package? Like there's a lot of stuff that says organic on it that's really not good for you. It may be certifiably organic, but it's not good for you, right? And so how do we come to certification labels like that? There's Audacious, which has got some brilliant lab work they're doing where companies can send in their beef or send in their milk or whatever and be able to make claims about nutritional superiority. There's some wonderful researchers in Germany and Switzerland doing like the real science of soil food web on compost tea. Like what is it about compost tea that works and doesn't work? And how do you make it work well, and how do you integrate that with weed teas and ferments? We got a great young farmer from the Netherlands who's really growing high quality seed and integrating a whole bunch of different practices. There's this guy from Australia who's doing side by side trials with beef. I mean, it's a completely broad spectrum of speakers.
Yeah. So this is really exciting to me because when I first started learning about regenerative agriculture and got bit by the bug, and I decided I was going to go down this route. This was one of the areas where I was like, this is a value-added marketing option for people to sell their product. Because, you know, we raise cattle, hogs, and chickens, cattle being the primary thing. We move them, you know, twice a day during the growing season, and we continue to move them every about 3 to 5 days during the winter. And in my mind, yep, I had heard about this sort of tool early on in my research about regenerative agriculture and just how to manage animals. And I thought in my head that I'm just going to start operating under nature's image with the thought that the food is going to taste better, be better, with the idea that some tool like this at some point is actually going to give you a number that you could slap on a marketing sheet, and you can prove the fact that the reason that we run hogs on pasture versus just keeping them in a barn is because the food quality comes out different. The reason that we make sure that the chickens are on a fresh piece of grass on a daily basis, instead of just being cooped up in a cage, is because of this. I could see it when I guess essentially what I'm saying is when I first did it, I could taste the difference, but I didn't know if it was just my brain messing with me because I'm the person.
So you want to be true.
Well, you want to be true. And then I'm also the person that rages. So it's like, I don't know if I'm necessarily the best person for this. And you started giving it to people and they claim that it was better tasting and better quality. And it's like, well, you're just saying that to my face. But in my mind, well, if there was this tool, because I had heard of people that were, you know, working on it, maybe I'd heard of you, you know, that would be a tangible thing that you could put on something and there'd be an actual thing that you could, you know, advertise.
Yes. Claim like you could make this legal and true. Yeah.
So in my situation, like, is that something that you envision where, you know, we move our cattle twice a day. We make sure that they're eating really good forage. We're making sure that they have access to shade. They're super comfortable. We're making sure that the hogs are on pasture and outside and have the freedom to be a pig. The same with the chickens. Is that something that you see now? Because I know you mentioned it, like organic. Just, I mean, organic chickens are a great example where an organic egg might come from a chicken that, you know, never saw the light of day, but they were fed organic feed. And my eggs taste a lot better than the eggs I would go get at an organic store. So is this something that you see homestead or people that are producing food at a scale like this that can use to, you know, differentiate between the taste and just saying that we're different? Is this something that we can tangibly start using in the near future?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I've got one of my little, like the second generation meter that we built and shipped out around the world that was basically calibrated to a couple compounds and a couple crops to show it was possible to have a flash of light meter. And when we finished that in 2021, we said, okay, great. It sure looks like from all the science we've done, you know, almost 10,000 samples of crops from hundreds of farms from multiple continents of, you know, dozens of types of crops, like variation is massive and you can test it with a meter. That's true. It does seem like it's true. Now the question is, what is nutrient density? What is quality? And it's not just higher levels of polyphenols or more copper or more zinc. It's got to be a whole complex biochemical matrix, which correlates with human health benefit and soil health benefit and animal welfare benefit and all these things, right? That's the thesis. And so for the past couple of years now, we've been working on defining nutrient density in beef. And we're right now, you know, what is this, end of April 2024, just about done with all of the sampling of all this, the meat and the manure and the soil and the forage and the human health and everything else and the data. And so hopefully by the end of this year, we're going to have a basic definition of nutrient density, which can then be used to build the next generation of meters. And that's taken us $1 million in 2.5-3 years to do with beef. We're, now that we figured out how to do it, we hope we can do wheat in, you know, 6 months for $250,000 and, you know, start to sort of just roll this thing out. So, I mean, in my mind, if we don't have an end game where the consumer can flash a light and test for themselves, like the system can be perverted. So, you know, I'm all in favor of people putting labels on packages that are true, but Like, how do you confirm it's true? Like, I don't want people to have to trust anybody else. I want people to be able to check for themselves and have a science-based hardware, you know, machinery, like verification system. Not that I think that science and machinery is like the be all and end all, because I think our tongues and our noses and our bodies are actually the real answer. But in this market-based economy that we seem to live in, you know, science and technology are part of it. And that's a way better framework than certification systems like organic that can be perverted and have been dramatically. That's the vision. And, you know, the issue we have, it's not necessarily the issue, but it's a struggle, is that it's expensive to do this real science. And there's not a lot of people with a lot of money who want this science to be done openly, right? A lot of tons of people say, I'll give you $10 million, you know, and we can make a company and make $1 billion. And I'm like, no, that's not an option. It has to be open source. The data has to be in the commons. It cannot be the Facebook algorithm, you know, thing. If it's an algorithm that nobody understands, you can't trust it. You shouldn't trust it. It's got to be open. And so paying for the science from donations is where the hurdle is right now. But I think we've made a lot of progress in the last few years, and we're making momentum is strong. So
what would be a way for someone to donate?
Go to bionutrient.org and press the donate tab button.
Perfect.
We're a nonprofit educational organization, and all donations are completely tax deductible. We're trying to basically build a grassroots movement. And the thought is, rather than going to rich people and foundations who have been supporting the work so far, which is awesome, let's see if we can get 100,000 people that are giving us $5 a month, you know?
Yeah.
Because if it's $250,000 a crop, if you got 100,000 people giving you $5 a month, that's $500 million a month. That means you can do 2 crops a month. And if there's 40 or 50 crops out there, then that's like 2 years. So let's, we the people, stand up and put pay a small tithe to the church of truth and science and agriculture. I mean, that's what we're trying to do, is keep it open, be honorable, you know, not be dogmatic, you know, not have our finger on the scale, but like,
How do you protect this from someone who wants to make $1 billion on it?
I want people to make billions of dollars. I think the only way things are going to succeed is if people make money doing it.
Yeah.
I don't want to make the unit. I want it to be your iPhone and your, you know, Pixel and your Galaxy. I want one of the cameras in your smartphone to be a spectrometer. And I want Apple to make its next $50 billion. People want that in their phone and they'll buy the iPhone 16. I mean, and other companies will build, you know, more expensive meters that can be used in the supply chain for agronomists and wholesalers and buyers. Like, let's create a dynamic where people can make money supporting solutions, because people making money seems to be what drives the world. So we're an educational nonprofit. Our objective is not to make money. Our objective is to, like, do the science that can hold the truth. And my position is, if the iPhone sensor is calibrated to the truth, and the Pixel's sensor is calibrated to the truth, and the Galaxy's is not, then our job is to tell everybody as loud as possible, don't trust the Galaxy, but the Pixel and the iPhone work. Like, we're in the position of saying, this is the truth as we understand it, and we want to be respected and trusted. And so when we say something, people listen to us because there's every reason to. And that transparency and honor and integrity in the space is what keeps people honest. So that's the strategy, not to make the money, but to be the guys that have done the work and are trusted and are holding integrity based on the openness and all the serious people who've looked at it and said, this is true. That's the strategy.
And what
see how well it works. Seems like it's moving forward.
That's awesome. I hope we can be a part of it too. What do you see?
All of us working together. Yeah.
Right. Right. How does the current unit work? If you want to break it down for people, how the current unit that you've been sending out works.
You said you wanted me to say things in ways that was common sense and not too sciencey. So it flashes
all right,
light.
So, hey, this is your,
it takes a little light that bounces back. It's called spectroscopy. Everything in chemistry is a vibration, like a copper is a thing. We are told copper is a thing, like a thing, like a piece of rock thing in chemistry, but really in physics, they say it's a vibration. It's a certain frequency of light. So it's how we know what stars are made up of. It's how we know what things very, very far away is made up of. Not because we went there and took a sample and brought it back to a lab, but because we took a picture of the light coming off of it. So the science is called spectroscopy. And I've always said, you know, if you can take a picture of something 10 light years away and know what it's made up of, because 10 light years is a long distance and we go and look way past 10 light years, like way past, then shouldn't we be able to take a picture of something a millimeter away and see what it's made up of? And yeah, the smartphones we have now are so much more sophisticated than what landed on the moon. So, you know, like it looks like we have the capacity now with technology being as sophisticated as it is to actually have these handheld ray guns. It's like, you know, we can see what it is. It's not a ray gun like you're burning something. It's like a tricorder from Star Trek. Like, you know, 80 out of 100. Yeah.
That would be amazing.
It's possible.
That would be amazing.
It's possible. That's how basically how it works. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the, that was one of the things that, because I think it's, I think that'd be so powerful to be able to allow people to prove that their management practices do translate to the actual nutrient density in food. So it kind of
And also to learn where they stand, because sometimes, you know, if the average is 25 out of 100 and you're at 50, yeah, you're better than 25, but there's a bunch of space between 50 and 100. So,
yeah,
you know, how can you do better also? It's like, it's not like I've arrived. It's also like, what else, how else can I improve? And it sure looks like the more you improve, the lower your cost of production becomes, the more economically viable your operation is. So I think a lot of people are still struggling, relatively struggling, because they aren't actually doing that well. When you really get things dialed in, it, you know, it just sings. It, you know, the system really sings and you start to make real money. I'm not sure everybody's there yet.
What are your soil health rules or principles or laws? You know, everyone kind of has different takes on that. What creates this? What gets someone to score a 90 out of 100 on this? What steps do they need to take?
Well, what steps do they need to take, or what causes the score? It looks like it's the level of soil health that gets the score. It's the level of life in the soil, this the vitality and the quantity and the breadth and diversity of life in the soil is the only thing that correlates with quality. It's not certification label, it's not practice, it's not variety, it's not soil type, it's not point of purchase. None of those things correlates. It's the level of life in the soil. So how do you get there? I just gotten here into Ireland. I've been in Wales for the past few days and I'm doing my 2-day course I've been doing for 15 years. It's all the principles I learned at Acres 20 years ago. And that's basically, you know, quite 20 years, maybe 17 or 18. You know, plants are green because they can't digest their food. They make sugar that they inject into the soil to feed microbes who can digest the soil to feed them. And so, it's really about creating a dynamic where the microbes can function well, and they need air to breathe. So if your soil's too tight, they die, things don't work. They need water to drink. So if your soil's too dry, they die, things don't work. They need food to eat. So if your soil's not covered and you don't have that liquid carbon pathway going or residue, they starve to death and things don't work. They need some basic minerals to build their bodies out of. So you don't have enough boron or cobalt or sulfur or whatever it is, any one of those things at insufficient levels inhibits the whole system and things don't work. And foundationally, the microbes themselves must be there. So you need that broad diversity of species, which is where the inoculants and the compost teas and things come in. So if you have constantly at all points in time, air, water, food, sufficient minerals, and the breath of life, the breadth, like the sophistication of all the different species, in a very rudimentary way, those foundational dynamics, if they're in place, life seems to, nature's been working for hundreds of millions of years with plants on ground before God invented fertilizer. So it's not like, you know, we got to have wicked fancy foliar sprays and sap tests and everything else. You know, indigenous cultures globally have been doing a really good job, did a really good job for a long time with no wheel, no plow, no beast of burden, you know, because they were sensitive to life and they were gently ensuring that life had what it needed and just did what, you know, did what needed to be done. So, I think the foundations are really simple. That air, water, food, minerals, life is the foundation of what I teach. And I think the reason that the BFA's work has spread so far around the world is because when people come to the course and to start, you know, applying the principles, they get results. Doesn't matter geography, soil type, climate zone, scale, crop type. Certainly there's a lot of really value, a deep value in the nuance of the plant sap analysis and the inoculants and the foliar sprays and the, I mean, all kinds of cool things. And those are helpful. But if you don't have the basics operational, you shouldn't expect things to function anywhere near as well as they could. And a lot of times we're sold things, whether it's fertilizers or insecticides or machinery or potting soil or just the cell trays or, you know, starter LED lights or, I mean, there's so many products that were sold that like you could try to beat nature. Like that tomato that's going to germinate in your garden in the end of May, like, let's just see how well the tomatoes you started are doing in the end of August. Let that be your challenge. If you can do better than nature can, and she gives you a 2-month head start, right? You start your tomatoes whenever you want. She's going to start them at the end of May. And let's see which plants are doing better at the end of August. If you can beat her, then you're a good farmer. Until then, you got lessons to learn.
I got lots of lessons to learn on that.
We all got lessons to learn. If you're not humble, I mean, you know, whatever.
Humble is a good one because I think that's an important one for folks because
central,
I think
foundational.
And if you don't wake up every day when you're doing this and be like, I'm an idiot, then I feel good. I'm happy for you. Maybe you're a lot smarter than me, but I think something about nature, you know, we went through it last year. We didn't get rain for 3 months and it's like, I don't know what to do. There's no way that I can make it rain. This is so annoying. And I'm kind of a control freak. And so that drive, that's why this interacting with the land and working with the land and animals has been such a good lesson for me because I don't have control and it's impossible not to find a way to be humble from it because it's so much bigger than us. It's so much, there's such a giant force moving. Yeah. You just have to try to like get into the wave a little bit and just roll with it. And if you try to stop that wave or be that hard force that stops it, it usually doesn't work. But what's something that you see, you know, maybe that's mainstream or what's something that's not mainstream that could help folks, you know, in this growing season to focus on? Like what's something that you do on a daily basis or, you know, when you're actively farming, what's something that you're kind of thinking about focusing about that you don't think people talk about very often?
There's a lot of things. I think for humility, you know, I don't think it means you're stupid or dumb or anything like that. I don't think the way you said it was quite right. You know, it's just a question of, I want to learn. I'm open to learning. I'm excited to learn more. You know, but for that humility, you know, the old fashioned refractometer, you know, if you start to get a little bit cocky, get the refractometer out and go and start squishing the leaves of your crops. And if every single one of your crops is a 12 or above, then you can puff your chest out a little bit. But if you're 3, 4, or 5, like most people are, understand that means you got a lot of opportunity for improvement. I've done a lot of courses and, you know, basically everything I've ever done is on YouTube for free. And I think, obviously Acres has an immense wealth of content. I mean, we've recorded every single one of our conferences, every single presenter at every single one of our conferences, and put them on YouTube. I love YouTube. I totally like, I don't do social media. I don't do TV. I don't do a lot of things, but I do, I definitely do YouTube. And you know, people who are members of Acres, as I understand it, if you're getting the newspaper, you get access to the full archives now. I mean, that's massive. That's completely massive. That's brilliant. Like, there's so much wisdom there that, like, if you drive tractor, if you're doing, you know, milking cow or whatever you're doing, that's like takes time and you're not otherwise occupied with people, kids around you or whatever, you know, you're basically bored. Get your earbuds in, get some recordings on and start listening and just educate yourself. And to have a little notepad in your if you're old fashioned notepad in your pocket, if you're newfangled, you can do your notes on your screen, but like something pops up, you hear something interesting, write it down. Track it down. Keep learning. I think it's not like we don't know pretty much everything we need to know. Like that's what I got when I went to Acres. I was like, okay, like pretty much a lot of things have been figured out. It's just that I never heard about them.
Yeah.
And how do you get to hear about them? You got to start studying. You just got to take responsibility for learning. And, yeah. And, I don't know. It's not like there's a silver bullet. It's not a silver bullet, I don't think.
No, there's not. And I think that's what my plan was with what we did with the membership site. You know, for folks that haven't seen it yet, you have access to the magazine, but we took 450 recording sessions from Acres conferences across the years. Yeah. And we are slowly releasing them in like segments, in different segments, so that they kind of stay kind of organized. I think, like you said, YouTube, I was self-taught through YouTube. I learned everything, almost everything I learned about grazing and managing with cattle. It all came from YouTube because yeah. There really wasn't a paid course that serviced what, you know, I learned. I mean, go to Greg Judy on YouTube and what he gives away for free is more than anything anyone could put in a course. I think what we do and what people pay for is the organization of the content and, you know,
being
able to access things quickly and giving it in a way, in a manner that, you know, someone can start with something and end with something. So what would you say with your event that's coming up? What is someone, you know, what are they coming to that? You know, what issues maybe do they have? And then what can someone expect to leave after 2 months of going to these meetings and calls? What can they leave with?
Well, I mean, this year we really want them to leave with an understanding of, where the nutrient density movement is. It's a word that a lot of people are starting to throw around, but like regenerative was a couple of years ago and still is, people are throwing it around. They don't really actually know what they're talking about. And so if this is a word and a concept and a thing that you think is important, we want to leave you feeling like you got your finger on the pulse of what's going on, what's true, like who's doing the legit stuff, what the cutting edge is, what's coming down the pike. Our hope is that this is a tide that lifts all boats, that nutrient density is the high ground where a lot of different constituencies can find common cause. And you know, I like to say hide behind the science, but, cause I think there's a lot of role of consciousness and intention in some of those more subtle things that people get a little uncomfortable about, but I mean, some people get really excited about that kind of stuff, but yeah. I mean, I think we've been trying to hold a space around this word, which, you know, can be focused on systemic solutions. And now that it's starting to get momentum, now that people are starting to talk about it and starting to, you know, hear about it more and more, like this is when you get done with this, I think it's going to be 4 months, right? 16 presentations over once a week for 4 months. You'll be able to speak a lot more intelligently. You'll actually have a much more deep understanding of who's who and what's going on. And you'll have met some amazing people and you can cross-pollinate and communicate with the other attendees and build community, get inspiration, you know, be more educated and empowered. That's what we're looking for.
Well, I'm excited for it. I will be attending and being a part of the conference, as many of those sessions as I can, because I hope I can leave it sounding a little bit more intelligent.
Yeah. Well, if we all work together, if we know what the hell's going on and we're talking to each other and we're learning from each other, if we're all like learning together and sharing, then we can, you know, be on the same team. We've got to, you know, we got to work together. Yeah.
It truly it is a solution to all this is that because, you know, I think number one thing people always say is, well, it doesn't work for me here. So let's get a bunch of folks together in a bunch of different areas and let's nail down some of these key concepts and then let's make some proof behind it and then let's spread the information around. And that's kind of what Acres has been doing for a long time. And Dan, you've been doing the same and I appreciate you joining us today. I think, and after the 4 months of digital online event that Dan's hosting, he's going to come to our EcoEgg event in December in Madison, Wisconsin and do one full day of a workshop on December 2nd. On this exact topic. So anything else that you would build on that kind of what people could expect out of your day long workshop at our conference?
I think the plan right now is to do half a day on what I call principles of biological systems. You know, if I could digest everything I've ever learned into 3 hours about how to do it, what would I say? And then the second half of the day is, you know, where's the science at? Where's the meter at? You know, what's the data telling us? If I could digest everything I know about the science of nutrient density, I'll, you know, put that in 3 hours or I'm not sure what the exactly time windows are. So, you know, do my best to sort of do a survey of like basic principles and practices and techniques and what the science is telling us. So I have to be in Australia like 36 hours later. So I'm not quite sure I'm going to pull that off, but
I was already committed. We had to pull some strength to keep them here, but I think it worked out well anyways, because those first 2 days of the conference, we call them EcoEgg U, and it's, you know, a full day of workshops where it's similar to what you're describing with your online event, where it's a little bit smaller groups. It's obviously not the whole conference, but you actually get to be in the room with someone for a whole day. And then, you know, I think the Q&A sessions have seemed to be the biggest thing that I've seen as far as responses from attendees that they get the most out of the fact that they get to be in a room. You'll be able to be in a room with Dan and ask him questions directly. So, you know, take it from me. I would recommend everyone sign up and attend Dan's conference. We'll have information in the episode notes about that. But then you'd be able to go through 4 months with Dan and all the speakers that he brings into his group. And then you can come see him for a whole day at our conference in Madison, Wisconsin, December 2nd. So, Dan, I appreciate you. I appreciate getting to know you. I think it's been amazing. And like I said before, we hope to make you proud with Acres and we hope that we work together a lot in the future.
I'm rooting for you. I'm rooting for you. You got a big mantle on your shoulders, like I said, and looks like you got broad shoulders. So yeah, everybody who loves Acres wants it to succeed. So we're rooting for you 100%.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate it. And safe travels to you too.
Thank you for listening to the Acres USA podcast, a podcast production of Acres USA. Find us on Spotify, Apple, Google Play, and other popular podcast platforms. Acres USA is North America's oldest publisher on production scale organic and regenerative farming. For more than 50 years, our mission has been to help farmers, ranchers, and market gardeners grow food profitably, regeneratively, and with nature in mind. Find our books and other Acres USA media and learn about Acres USA events at acresusa.com. Read our online magazine at members.acresusa.com, and we'd like to thank Acres USA staff for their contributions to producing this podcast. This episode was edited and engineered by Kennedy Strosel and Weston Larson of Acres USA. We're grateful to our guests for taking the time to talk with us about their experiences.